Is this some kind of trick? Why do you want to help him?
I have a tender spot in my heart for cripples, bastards, and broken things.
SpecficMedia.com presents Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast with hosts E.G. Holyfield, Christiana Ellis, Chooch, Viv, and Nuchus.
Hodor.
Hodor.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 4 of the Beyond the Wall podcast associated with SpecficMedia.com. I am PG Holyfield, and we are joined tonight by our most of our regular panel. We have Chooch and Viv and Nuchus. And Christiana is on the disabled list for tonight, and hopefully she will be back next week.
She's actually off saving the world, but we are not supposed to disclose that.
Well, you just...
Great job, Nutty.
Spoiler.
They won't tell anyone.
Oh my gosh, drinking game. Okay, spoiler. Okay.
Saving the world from the danger hole.
So, how's everybody doing tonight?
Hodor.
Good. Hodor.
Help Bran down the hall.
Hodor.
Hodor. Doing Hodor.
Said Hodor.
As you can tell, we're all happy that we got to see Hodor.
Yes, finally.
Yeah, as a just jumping into it, one thing that I didn't like quite as much just because of how it was done in the audiobook, Roy Dotrice is a very, he does Hodor.
Hodor.
Where he says Hodor, he just says Hodor, and he does it like 100 times, of course, because that's all he says, and it's very distinctive, and you know, Hodor just saying Hodor was a little different, but
he did have different inflections, and I liked that.
Yes, I did like Hodor. I was just that was one thing that came across to me was that, you know, Roy Dotrice does it very distinctively. So
anyway. It's interesting because in my head it was always more cartoony.
Yeah, me too.
You know?
Actor playing Hodor is a well-known DJ and celebrity from Ireland, and he does a bunch of music projects and stuff. So he's actually pretty well-known over there. But I don't know. I kept looking at him, and I was like, he looks like Ethan. I'm going to mispronounce his name, but Slurpee or whatever, the brother from My Name is Earl. But... And I looked it up, and he's big old celebrity. And apparently, everyone was super excited when he was cast.
Look, unless he's worked with Kanye, I don't know who he is.
Not that kind of DJ, like the guy that plays on the radio, and he puts the Kanye on.
Again, I say.
Viv, I don't even know what that means, so. Because I'm old. Anyway, so how did everybody...
Look it, we've had this conversation, we're the same age. I'm going to cut you the next time I see you if you keep calling yourself old.
Yeah, well, it is the truth. Anyway, so how did everybody feel...
Suck it.
...initially, suck it, about episode 4?
I found it to be very dark.
Yeah.
A very dark episode.
Yes.
There wasn't as much levity. There was, you know, they're continuing on the exposition train, which is fine, because I find the conversations and the little history pieces pretty fascinating. Mm-hmm. So, but it didn't seem to have as much levity.
They definitely went, there was definitely a lot of dark stuff covered. I mean, we got to see that, yes, again, reiterated in case we forgot, Viserys is a scumbag pig douchebag that bad things should happen to. They're definitely setting the stage for future events by dealing with a lot of dark stuff right now.
Nuchus?
I really liked it. I think that there was definitely a lot of backstory. Like, we've heard all about the Greyjoys and Balon's rebellion and everything else. And we actually got introduced to some characters that we may have seen but didn't really know who they were. And that was kind of cool. But, you know, I mean, it was great. I just, when it ended, I was like, wait, you're ending there? But it is a good scene to end on. It just, every time I watch this, I keep thinking, like, when I'm watching it live, I'm like, wait, it's over already? The hour just goes by so quickly.
It does. So. And it's going to continue to do that.
Yep. Yeah. For me, it was my least favorite episode, but I still loved it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, because of the nature of the episode and the things that happen in it, and, you know, it corresponds to what's going on in the book, It's pretty dark, like you said, and just things that they left out, which they could leave out. I mean, they had to leave out. Right. Things we don't get to see Syria, which is fine. Actually, they don't show him in the book either, but it would have been cool to have Syria, because Syria made such an impact on that episode, on the last episode, and it was so positive and so light and, you know, let you know that there is some fun in this world.
Yeah.
It would have been cool to get a little bit, I thought they might do a little bit more of the actual training rather than just Arya talking to Ned about the training or that. But I was very happy overall. I was very happy to see Theon finally get explained who he is. And it was cool to have just the different people outside of that, because Jaime talked about him and Tyrion talked to him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that was all cool. I'm getting a little bit into details, but again, overall, really liked it, but of the four episodes so far, it was my least favorite. And
if I can go back,
go ahead.
Absolutely. And if I can go back, because you asked me, but I didn't really say what I thought of the episode. It was not my least favorite. It was probably one of my two favorites, because we saw empowerment by different characters. And we can talk about later what they did, but Arya and Jon and Daenerys all showed fantastic empowerment in different scenes. And I freaking loved it. I was like cheering silently because I was sitting next to Chooch, but I was cheering.
Well, let's jump right into it. Let's talk about Daenerys, because
you, but I think if we don't do this now, we'll never get back to it. We opened up with Bran's dream, and we get to see the three-eyed crow. And I think this is kind of important to talk about, because we didn't see him yet. And people who haven't read the books, I think, are probably really lost and might not have even noticed that that crow had three eyes.
Had three eyes, yeah.
It was very well done, and it looked very realistic. But I just, I don't know if people really get it. Like, they were he dreamt seamless. He was walking.
Yeah.
And you know, it kind of ties back to don't listen to crows from last week. But the three-eyed crow is kind of important to the overall series, not just this first book. And I'm wondering how they're going to handle stuff like that. And so far, they're kind of leaving me lacking, but I don't know.
Right. It was great to see the three-eyed crow and get a little bit of the dream world. I think that, you know, we just have to wait and see how they handle that in the future. But the initial mention of the crows by old Nan, and then, okay, we see a crow and it has three eyes. We have no reason why or understanding why we see the three crows. And for those that haven't read the book, and, you know, we don't want it to be a spoiler, but it, you know, maybe depending on how it comes in the future, you know, Bran's dreams are very important in the book.
Yes,
because, you know, it's obvious in the book that his dreams are his conduit. You know, he's lost some of his physical abilities, but some of the things that are tied to his dreams are very important.
Right. So he also gets motivation from these dreams.
Right. And so the fact that we've seen this three-eyed crow, even though in the book it may have been a little more spelled out up front, okay, there's something very mystical about this three-eyed crow and the fact that it has three eyes, you know, hopefully we'll get more of that in future episodes. But it was a good precursor to say, okay, there's something going on with Bran, and we'll see what happens going forward.
I thought it looked fantastic. I think you're right that it may have, the effect on it may have been so clean that it might be hard for people to pick up on it. But I'm afraid to say any more than you guys have said, because I don't want to spoiler, you know, anything.
I hadn't thought about it. It seemed kind of blatant to me, but I was looking for it.
Yeah. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. For anybody reading the book that has read the book, they were like, okay, crow. Okay. Turn your head. I want to see if you got three eyes, you know, and it did, and it was great.
If I was cooped up all day with no one but this old bat for company, I'd go mad.
Then we meet Theon. I keep forgetting to mention, he's actually played by Alfie Allen, Lily Allen's brother. And anyone that knows Lily Allen's music, the song Alfie is actually about him. Mm. She actually got him to go to rehab and clean himself up, and he became an actor.
I had no idea.
If you Google him and your safe search is off, you'll find lots of naked pictures.
Okay. Because
he did some naked plays in London.
We have to pause now because I'm going to go look at naked pictures of Alfie Allen.
Well, you can do the same for
Alfie,
Jamie Lannister,
Lily.
By the way.
Alfie. Are there naked Alfie. Pictures of
really?
Lily?
Oh, my.
I have not found naked pictures of Lily Allen.
Have you searched for them, though?
I don't know. Maybe. I've been aware of her for many years, so I might have.
Okay, I did want to jump around because Viv had mentioned Dani and her empowerment.
Yes.
And one of the things that had bothered me about the last episode was that in the scene in the field where mm-hmm. you know where Dan. Viserys attacks Dany, and then he gets, you know, hogtied by the, you know, the whip. Mm. That was like the first time in the books that Dany actually struck back at him.
Right.
Because she pushed him away, and then he, like, really started to attack her, and then Jogo, whipped him. But I did like how just the transition, or the, you know, the movement between... you know, her growth, and mm-hmm. this was the time that she actually struck back, and mm-hmm. I think it worked really well. I thought it was a good choice as far as, you know, how they handled that, so.
Mm. Especially not being in her head, because in her head, you can see her getting stronger, and so it made sense that she hit, you know, that she struck back in the field, and that she struck back even stronger in the tent, but, you know, for the viewer that isn't getting that internal monologue, I think it was the best way to go.
Yes.
I agree. And she hit him with a gold belt. That hurt.
And the look on his face.
Oh, yeah. He
was... Holla.
But it would be interesting for somebody who hasn't read the book, like their perspective, because I don't know that there was very much of an arc overall, because we didn't see any abuse. Like in the first episode, there was the little bit.
Yeah.
But... it's a pretty fast transition in, you know, three episodes or whatever.
But in every scene they show him, they mm-hmm. show him as a douchebag.
Right. And clearly he's more in his head than he is.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, he thinks much more of himself than he is. And that's then that
the
came
entitlement.
Out very
well,
clearly.
We had the nipple. Well, he didn't grab her nipple, but the first episode where he's obviously fondling her and, you know, making her feel uncomfortable. To the discussion of, you know, I'd let Drogo and his 40,000, you know, fuck you.
And the horses.
And the horses, which, And then, you know, it goes from there. So I think her growth as far as being very weak and then starting to feel that she's the Khaleesi, and then this episode where she... you know, strikes back at him finally. That growth was pretty good. But again, you don't have enough time in these episodes to do what they did in the book. I think they did the best they probably could.
That's what I was just thinking too. It's only like 10 episodes. So,
I would love to get some feedback from listeners who haven't read the books. If you guys want to call in and just tell us what you think, I think it'd be really great.
Nobilis, we're talking to you.
Yes, Nobilis. I know there are some others out there. I just can't think of who's read and who hasn't read.
Yep.
I had finished the first book, I think, before the second episode aired.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on the fence whether to go on and decided I'm not going to read any of the other books.
Yeah.
Until the end of the first season, you mean?
Because we know they're doing a second season on HBO, and if we continue to podcast it, then I can have the totally Rookie unread perception.
That's some self-controlled chooch.
That's awesome, chooch. No, seriously, because
I think it's pretty awesome.
It's going to be at the earliest next, in September, but more likely next February before we could possibly get season two. So that's awesome that you're sacrificing.
Take one for the team.
Yeah.
Take one for the team so we can get the non-reader point of view.
I've gotten a few people who told me that they've read the first book for the series and that they're debating whether or not to read the second book before the second series because they're waiting till the end of this series to see if it would be if they would have preferred not to read it. And so there's quite a few people like Chooch who are on the fence like, should I start reading the next book or not? Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting. They won't have to wait so long because <then, laughs> by the end of the at least the fourth series, you know, they'll have the fifth book to read.
The fourth season,
yeah. Maybe the sixth book will be out.
Can we talk about Samwell?
We will. We're going to pause for 15 seconds while I get a beer. Before we get to Sam, let's actually move back a little bit to talk a little bit about Theon. We had Theon come into the room to talk to John. We got to meet Hodor.
Bran.
And that was a good scene because you got to see Theon, you know, show that he's not real happy. And he likes to give orders, whether he has the right to or not. And he, you get to see a little bit more of him. He brings in Hodor. And then
I like the line. I like the line that he says. I don't want it either, but Rob is Lord of Winterfell. So I take orders from him and I give you orders.
Yeah,
you because too. That kind of goes back to the line from the first book when he says to Rob or John, I don't take orders from you. I take orders from your father. And it shows that he's kind of honor bound.
For listeners that have not read the books, just to explain who Theon is, it becomes a little obvious as the episode goes on. But Theon is part of the Greyjoy family, which is the family that lives on all the islands sort of off of the coast of Westeros. They tried to rebel against the Starks at one point because they... the Starks were the closest family, you know, the closest land that they, to them to want to take over. And, because of, as they mentioned, sheer numbers more than anything, they were unsuccessful. And one of the things that happened was that, Theon, was taken as, a ward, by the Stark family, which in essence means that he was a hostage to make sure that the Greyjoy family didn't try a rebellion again.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's brought out a couple times that, you know, he has become, whether it's fond of the family or just, you know, he's
chummy.
appreciative of the Starks as far as not just, you know, treating them like a hostage. He has been, you know, brought up as an equal as far as, you know, being part of a not a royal family, but a great house. Yes, very good. And so the fact that that he's there and he, you know, has the position that he has is important in the books, but it's brought out also that, you know, his family not as well liked as some of the other families, the great houses that you meet. So,
I really want to express to people who haven't read the books that Balin's rebellion, which is why Theon is there, has nothing to do with Robert's rebellion, where he overtook the throne. This actually happened afterwards, and that's when the Lannisters were on their side, and that's why later we find out where Jaime and Jory were actually fighting side by side. I feel like the show doesn't really... I mean, it's hard to express that because they're already putting so much info into one episode. I feel like if you hadn't read the books, you might think, wait, so what part of the war was that? Thinking that there's one war, but there's actual multiple wars and battles that we're talking about here.
Oh, I could see that, yeah.
Yeah.
So Viv, what do we get to? Oh, Sam. So talk about Sam, Viv.
Well, no, I want to talk about Theon now.
Oh.
Well, you said something that I wanted to make a point on, and that was that for me, and I think that I said it in a previous episode, that having read the books that, you know, the first four books, I think it shows why they are doing it so much earlier, but in my mind, in the first book, we didn't really see Theon being that talkbacky. He was more subservient. He was more of a flatterer. He was more of a kind of, you know, in your face, I'm your friend, and then might go off and smirk to himself. But I don't even think he would have confided his real feelings to anybody the way that they're having him vocalize it here.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anybody else. Okay. You agree?
I perfectly agree with that. Yep.
Right.
What about you?
I assumed that Theon was loyal throughout all of book one, even though there were some times when people would bring up questionable loyalties. But I continued to think that he was loyal, and I think that's what I was supposed to believe.
Yeah. What about you, Chooch?
I never gave him that much attention.
Right on. Moving on to Sam.
Before we go to Sam, can we just talk a little bit more about Hodor? I feel like this is the only time we get to see him in this episode, and I absolutely love Hodor. I thought that he looked perfect. Absolutely perfect. He was a big man. Mm-hmm. And the way that he was carrying Bran was perfect. Mm-hmm. But also the way that, like, the actor, he's standing there and he kind of has this dumb, far-off look as he's standing there just holding this kid, not even breaking a sweat. And then it's like, kneel. And he just kneels, you know. And it was so perfect to the writing. And this isn't important, but I like to mention it. Hodor is actually old Nan's great-grandson or grandson, one of them.
Grandson,
one of those, yeah. She's old enough, it could be great grandson, but I want to say grandson.
Yeah, and that's just cool.
Yeah, so. It was nice to see old Nan briefly in that episode, so that was nice.
Yeah,
and then we go down and there's the whole interaction between Tyrion and Bran, and Bran says, "I'm not a cripple," because he's all upset. The name of this episode is part of one of the lines that I love, you know.
Is this some kind of trick? Why do you want to help him?
I have a tender spot in my heart for cripples, bastards, and broken things.
Which is the name of the episode. But I also love, I'm not a cripple.
I'm not a cripple.
Then I'm not a dwarf. My father will rejoice to hear it.
And lastly, dealing with Theon, is they talk about Roz.
Yes, I think everybody that has watched the episode, whether you have read the book or not, you're very disappointed that you didn't get to see Roz.
I think we did.
We had multiple
episode one.
Who was Tyrion laying with?
He was laying with a redhead. That was one of the things we were going to do today, was go back to episode one and check out, you know, and see if there was a redhead frolicking with Tyrion.
There you go.
Well, she was the slurping one.
She's not very good then.
Yeah, she didn't have boobs that they weren't
perfect boob breasts, so maybe there's more than one redheaded whore.
Although
I also wrote that I love the shot of Theon fuming as Tyrion rides away.
Yeah, that was really great interplay between Theon and Tyrion to be able to get the story out about the Greyjoys being instrumental in the burning of the Lannister fleet. And just, you know, all of that that was a great way to get that exposition in there, but be part of a conversation that made sense and all that stuff. So that was good. And then Tyrion throwing a coin to Theon was just like, okay,
Your next tumble with Roz is on me. I'll try not to wear her out.
That was classy.
Oh, Tyrion, I love you.
Yes. We move over to the wall. It was nice to see Gren and Pip get some more screen time. Rast, you just want to kill, which is the bastard guy that Ghost ends up scaring, and we'll talk about that more, I'm sure, in a minute, because we love Ghost. But we get to meet Samwell Tarly. And, for those of you that haven't read the book, Sam is... he is a character that you'll get to see a lot, and
he's awesome.
The story, you know, the way they brought out the story, which is the same in the book, but just the way that, you know, they brought it out early that, you know, his father doesn't like him very much.
Tomorrow, you're going to take the black, forsake all claim to your inheritance, and start north. If you do not, he said, then we'll have a hunt.
And somewhere in these woods, your horse will stumble, and you'll be thrown from your saddle to die. Or so I'll tell your mother. Nothing would please me more.
Mm-hmm. And that was well done. And just in a very short amount of time, you get the understanding how the relationship between John and Sam develops. And even though he feels more like he's protecting him, it's pretty much a friendship that, you know, starts right up front. And that was awesome.
Well, I think what you see here is that John realizes he may have been born a bastard, but his father loved him. Whereas Samwell was noble born and his father treated him like a bastard. And you get more of that in the books, but essentially it's like, no, you're not getting my sword. You're not getting my house. You're not getting my lands. You're not getting his my name. Titles.
He didn't even get his name.
Well, he got Tarly, but now he's going off to the brothers, and who cares what your name is? You're man of the Night's Watch. You're a brother.
Okay, so Samwell is very much, in my mind, he is very much like Sam in the Lord of the Rings series.
Totally. I equate them
very similarly. I adore them almost equally. And what we've seen of Sam so far is the tip of the iceberg. He is a very rich character. The acting, I thought, the guy, you know, whatever his name is, I'm sorry I don't look up, you know, actor names, but the guy that's portraying him did a fantastic job of giving him depth and developing empathy and pity when you hear his story and you see that he's craven and everybody immediately wants to shun him except for John. And I think Nutty explained that dynamic pretty well, why John instantly felt a need to protect him. And I also really enjoyed the scene with John and Sam cleaning out the armory and they're talking about, you know, getting laid and all that stuff. And he's like, you know, I like girls too. And I don't know that I got that sense of him in the book, you know, that he's, you know, he
well,
always
definitely so- not in book one.
No, but he's actually, probably... Nutty, you might be the only one that knows this. Have you seen anything where they've said that he named him Sam because of some sort of tie to Lord of the Rings?
You know, I haven't seen anything specifically saying that. I do know that there have been often people will say Samwise. I mean, you know, instead of Samwell, and then people are like, "This isn't Lord of the Rings."
Right.
They're very similar, though.
But
yeah,
I mean, pictured them exactly the same physically. So when I saw the actor playing him, he didn't look like Samwise, but I think he was perfect for Samwell. And again, much like other casting that didn't look exactly how I pictured, the acting brought the character to life. And
he's
this actor
fantastic.
Played pathetic so well.
Yeah.
The little whimpers and the sobs and the running. And it wasn't comical. It wasn't, you know, Laurel and Hardy looking.
No.
And
it was,
you know,
pathetic.
You just want to put your arms around him and go, "It's okay, Sam. It's okay. It'll be all right." So I thought that was great. Chooch, your thoughts?
Well, then, you know, I was having another kind of nitpicky thing when we saw more wolves in this episode. And one of the things that kind of bugged me a little bit is that, and maybe it's just because they're not full grown yet, but the direwolves are supposed to be these ginormous, huge beasts.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have regular wolves, but that's a nitpicky thing. But Ghost did look absolutely fierce.
Yes.
And when you see those eyes and those teeth, no matter what size, you're going to be scared waking up to that.
I want to know about the red eyes. Like, did they get an animal really with red eyes? Did they put that in later? I'm just very curious. Like, I know a lot of white animals have red eyes because they're actually albino and they tend to be deaf also and whatnot. But I'm just curious if those eyes are really red or if they're slightly red and they enhance them or if they put them in later or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I think the thing that
more, I'm curious about.
More pinkish eyes, I thought that was definitely photoshopped.
I don't care. It looked awesome.
It looked awesome.
Me being colorblind, I didn't notice the red eyes or pink eyes at all, but still, he looked great.
I didn't know you were colorblind.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So Vase Dothrak, I believe that's where they did their filming in Malta, and I thought it looked really good. I really liked how it looked. Any thoughts?
Just looked like a bunch of mud and... No.
No, the cliffs and
actually before we go there, I did want to mention before we go before we leave the wall this time, you know, Alistair Thorne,
his story,
you know, his position as, you know, trying to train these kids and to becoming actually men of the watch, I thought they did a pretty good job of, at least in the first scene, when we come back to him later, it's a little different, but just him trying to make them understand that someone like Sam, you know, is going to bring death to them if he's supposed to watch their back. I thought that was pretty well done, and we'll come back to him later. Whereas in the book, I mean, he just came across as, you know, so
mean
to John that I thought they did a good job of, okay, maybe Alistair's trying to make a good point. Maybe it's Lou Gossett Jr.
Officer
and gentleman.
Why would a slick little hustler like you want to sign up for this kind of abuse anyway?
I want to fly jets, sir.
My grandmama wants to fly jets.
And, you know, we're going to see that he's a good guy. And then you have the scene later, which we'll talk about later.
I was going to say, like, Arlie Ermey or a drill sergeant, not to insult drill sergeants, but he seems like a dick. And then all of a sudden he comes out with this kernel of, why am I being a jerk to you? Because if I'm not, and you're supposed to be defending that guy, do you really want Sir Piggy to have your back? So,
and it makes perfect sense. You're like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I thought at first it seemed like the typical or the kind of the generic relationship of he's extra hard on John because he knows he can dig deeper and he knows he can bring it.
Yeah.
You know, but in that little story, you know, made it clear how much bigger this is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is important to remember. Yes, we feel, you know, pity and empathy for Sam, but there is a bigger issue here beyond, we don't want to be too hard on the Kraven, you know, no matter how likable he is, that there is a real threat and you know, and all of that to be aware of. And
he's right.
And that is very different from the book. I'm glad you pointed that out, PG, because I felt the same way. I felt like Sam was just like a target of unfair treatment and stuff, but that's probably because I hurt him. So,
I understood why Sam was a target when reading the books and whatnot, but I still didn't like it. Because to me, I've always thought that Thorne was trying to make him quit and go back. But of course, Thorne didn't realize, it's this or death. So, because for John and for Samwell, it's not death or the wall. I mean, so far as Thorne knows. They could always go back to their castles.
I thought
but these other guys, they don't. Well, no,
oh, they haven't sworn.
Once you haven't taken the words.
They haven't taken the oath yet. That's right.
They haven't said the words.
Yeah, so he's just going
to
wash them
out. And that's something to specify for the audience, for those that haven't read the book. You may have not really picked up on that. They are in training at the wall to be, you know, in the black, men of the black, and all that. But they haven't said the oath yet. They haven't said the words. They are still free to leave until they take the oath. Once you take the oath, if you leave, you're a deserter and you're killed.
Right.
So that's why the dude that ran away was beheaded and why we're saying that, you know, he may be trying to get Sam to leave, why that dynamic is different because they haven't taken their oath.
And when I was mentioning the wolves, I just clicked also. There was the online webcomic. I don't know if you guys follow Penny Arcade.
Good call, honey.
Penny-arcade.com. And the comic on the 6th was actually related to Game of Thrones. And I guess it does help a little bit if you know the backstory of the character. I guess it doesn't even really matter.
I don't think it matters.
You just know that one's kind of a doofus and one's kind of more cerebral.
Yeah.
So Gabe, who's kind of more the doofus, says, I've decided to get each of my sons a wolf pup to guard them against the dangers of the world. And Tycho says, dangers? You mean like wolves? What's the worst that could happen? And Tycho says, your children could be devoured by wolves? Oh, okay. Yeah, that's pretty bad.
All you got to do is get past the bastard.
You sure you want to do this?
No.
So moving on to Jorah and Dany, which is the next scene after the wall. They have a great conversation, which is pretty much straight from the book, where they talk about just what's going on, which is from the book, but then they condense what's probably one of the best stories from the first book, which is Jorah talking about how he met his wife,
yeah,
and got married, and she turns out to be, you know, this woman that just needs, you know, to be pampered and taken care of and expects to be
kept woman.
Yeah, kept woman and
trophy wife.
You know, he, you know, because of her, he takes all these steps and ends up to the point where he does what he does, selling, you know, trying to take these poachers and selling them into slavery, which gets him exiled. And, you know, they condense that into pretty much two sentences.
I had no money and an expensive wife.
And where is she now?
In another place with another man.
But still, that was a good scene with them, again, adding adding layers to their characters. And then
I feel we have like
probably the either people liked it or just thought it was hilarious, the scene of Viserys in the bathtub with...
Loved it.
With, it's Dory. Not Eri, Dory. Yeah. Eri's the other one that with the
There's accent. Eri, Jiri, Jirki, or whatever you say it, and then Dory or something like that. Yeah. So there's...
Thanks for
it's confusing. It's confusing when you're reading it.
We know,
he's in the bathtub with Dewey. Yes.
We know it ends with E, but we don't know which one it is. But
we could name them after Charlie's Angels.
I mean, it's actually, I mean, when I was watching, it was actually the best scene of Loved Viserys. It.
Yes.
I mean, it gave you a little more depth to him than just being an asshole all the time. But then he's an asshole at the end, so, you know, it just, you know, punches in there, so.
Right.
Well, you almost think he's charming, and then all of a sudden he's like, the hell did I buy you for? And you're like, oh, right, you're a dick, I forgot.
Yes, it is. What did I buy you for? To make me sad?
No, Your Grace. To, teach your sister.
To teach my sister how to be a better lover? You think I bought you to make Khal Drogo happy?
Well, it's almost as if he forgot that he was with a whore. What, you know, essentially he bought her to pleasure him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was having this in-depth conversation, and then, wait a minute, that is sad. Why did I buy you?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like...
But it also... Go ahead. Sorry.
No, he's just a dick. It's always going to come around to him being a dick. That's going to be reiterated over and over and over again, because he is such a dick.
A dick.
Well, and the extra trigger of his hatred for Khal Drogo.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it also shows you that he actually remembers Westeros. And he remembers growing up in the Red Keep. And he remembers the dragons in the throne room and how his father was actually, even though he wasn't set to be king, his father was raising him with the idea that, well, he could be king, so he needs these lessons. And he's a little boy and he's learning all these names, whereas Dany, she has no memories of home. So she doesn't really know what they're fighting to go back to. Whereas for him, if you kind of think about it, it had to be... Yes, he's a dick and we hate him, but it had to be pretty traumatic and messed up, his life, going from living in the castle and he was a prince to you're a beggar. And if you try to set foot towards home, you're going to get killed. So I thought it was really interesting.
I don't know if they really, I can't remember if they really addressed it. I think it was in the first episode or maybe the second episode when they were talking about, you know, she said, I just want to go home. And he says, that's what I'm trying to do, get you back, you know, to Westeros. And in her, I don't know if they addressed it in the TV show, but in her mind, home was the place with the big red door where she remembers growing up, which was after they left the Seven Kingdoms. So his memory of home and her memory of home are two very different things. And so they are very different. Like Nettie said, she wasn't raised under the, you're a princess, you're a dragon, you're this, you're that. She was raised under the vile and the bitterness of Viserys. So it's no wonder that she cows as much as she does, or cows, whatever, as much as she does, and why it was such a beautiful moment when she didn't do that anymore. So
he was essentially her father as well as her brother.
Yep.
Because she didn't have anyone else.
Yep. The one thing that always hit me about the book, I don't think about all that stuff. All I think about is we have generations of these Targaryens that have bred brother to sister. Yes. And from the moment that you meet Viserys in the book, you know that he is as mad as the Mad King.
Yes.
Whether, you know, he doesn't have the power of the Mad King, but he has, he's the frustrated wanting to have that power of the Mad King. And, you know, having Dany be the, you know, the abused sister.
Yeah.
And seeing her come out of her own and being, you know, becoming what she's becoming, you know, it's, you know, that's what I get out of it. I don't, you know, I reading the book anyway, the show has done a pretty good job. Just that one scene did more to give him a human quality than they ever did in the book. Even though he was a dick at the end, he was still more human in that scene than anywhere else.
So I completely agree. I completely agree. I think that that's one of the things that I like about the show is we're actually getting some more levels, because in the books, like you said, it was just Martin genetics. You know, he's an inbred freak, and that's why he acts like a freak.
Well, not necessarily about the bathtub scene, but with Dany, with their altercation later, that realization to her that he's never going to be able to run this army. That you know, she's coming into her power as Khaleesi, and then realizing how everything he has been giving is a front, and that he really just is not a leader.
No. Especially for people that he doesn't respect.
Right.
Because he doesn't respect the Dothraki.
Right, right. Yeah, they're just an ends to a mean. Mean to an end.
Yeah, to him they're just savages.
Mm-hmm.
So in the show anyway, they move from Dothraki to King's Landing.
And the nitpick, my obligatory nitpick is the horde of 10 guys again.
Oh, yeah.
Where's the friggin' army? And this time Viserys actually said, "This is my army," and he's marching them the wrong way. And all I saw were 10 guys again. That was not a friggin'
army. They're behind Dany off camera. They're like Snuffleupagus. Whenever you're there, they're not there.
It's like the dire wolves. Where the fuck are they? Yes, I know. 300% more dire wolves.
Choose, you just have to have faith that there's 10,000 guys riding horses.
If you believe in Dothraki, clap your hands and they will appear.
I do believe in Dothraki. I do believe in Dothraki.
Back to King's Landing.
PG.
Septimordain and Sansa.
Yeah, we have the scene between Sansa and Septimordain, which was, again, expository, but again, you get the feeling of Sansa, you are such a little wuss.
Spoiled bitch.
Actually, I have to disagree.
Really?
This is an added scene. It's not in the books.
Yes.
I think that this was really good because it showed you that Sansa realizes her only value is to produce sons. Not just children, produce sons. She thinks Joffrey hates her now. And she says, Joffrey will, you know, if I don't have any sons, everyone will hate me. Joffrey will hate me. But really, she realizes that her only value is to produce sons. Because if she doesn't produce sons, then the kingship, the throne, goes to Tommen and not to her children.
Right.
And I think it kind of puts her in her place a little and puts more pressure on her.
I do understand that and I see that, but the only thing I got out of that was that, okay, for the people that saw the Tudors and you had the, you know, the wives of Henry VIII that couldn't produce male children, they would be beheaded, and I just didn't, I mean, I, it didn't work for me as just watching it, but I do see your point.
Well, if you only had girls, I suppose the throne would pass to Prince Joffrey's little brother.
And everyone would hate me.
I see your point, too, but the reason I'm not a huge fan of that added bit is because I think that it gave her more intelligence and she...
More thought process than she had in the books?
Well, I don't think that in the books, she didn't think beyond, I'm in love with him. This is my fairy tale. Arya's messed it up. Yeah. Now my dog is dead. My wolf is dead. And she was not a deep character. She just wasn't. And I don't know yet how I'm going to feel about it with what they're, the whole series. For right now, it unsettles me because that was one of the things about her. She was this almost pristine and pure little rose that was in a bubble. And she was naive and she was pristine and she didn't really get what was going on. What's going on? I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm being the good little, you know, noble girl that I'm supposed to be. Why are all these bad things happening to me? You know, let me just make sure that my ribbons in my hair are perfect and my curls are straight. Or not straight, but, you know, perfect, and everything should be fine. That was how she was in the book. And that, and also when she said that, you know, my grandfather and uncle were killed in this room. Mm-hmm. Again, she was not that observant.
Yeah.
She didn't put those things together. She was always frittering about, worrying about what did the queen think of her? What did her prince think of her? And how was she going to fix this? And that kind of, it disturbs me, but I'm willing to wait and see where it goes.
Well, similarly for me, when they show the actual jousting tourney, and in the book, it was her gossiping with other girls,
right,
and it was very frivolous and very girly and very, very swoony, and it didn't have any of that. It was like, it was very stark, for want of a better word, but it was grim.
That's the thing. I think that I agree with you 100%, and that's exactly how it was in the books. But I think they kind of had to do something to her character because I think as viewers, fans who hadn't read the books would have been more upset about her being portrayed exactly how she was in the books. I think that it would have been harder to take. Also, the other thing is we've aged her in the series. She's aged like, what, 3 or 4 years? So you got to have a little more depth. And so far, I'm liking it. I'm liking the fact that I'm sympathetic for Sansa. I still hate her, but I'm more sympathetic for her now than I am when I'm reading the first book. Because when I'm reading the first book, I get to a Sansa chapter, I'm like, oh gosh, when is this over? You're so stupid. Stop it.
See, I disagree with that. I found sympathy for her in the first book because that's how she was raised. The same way that's how Viserys was raised. This is how she was raised. She was raised to have babies. Either knights or princes or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what her goal was. That's what she was being primed for, so to speak. And that Arya is allegedly being primed for. So, go ahead. I'm sorry, PG.
No, I don't want to interrupt you. But the one line that really bothered me in that whole conversation was, and I understand not getting into spoilers, but I understand why they're doing it in the series. But the fact that she says, I won't forgive my father ever, didn't play right for me. I just was like, even in the books, she understood why her father had to kill, her
She didn't seem to blame Ned in the books for Lady at all. It was all Arya's fault. Yeah.
And I
agree with you.
I think there's a reason for this, which we won't get into, but I think it's going to come up later. So I think that's, they made this choice to have her feel this way about her father.
I think also it'll help them with filming and such, because then it'll give them a reason not to have Ned and Sansa in the same scene.
I've got to take issue with, we gave that, or you gave that as a possible reason why they didn't show the direwolves with the column of the armies they were going. And, well, we can't do this because of costs, and it might have been difficult to film. I don't give a fuck. I really don't give a fuck. I don't care that they've aged Sansa. I didn't ask them to. I don't care that they've decided that everyone in the world thinks that she should be smarter, more observant, and more empowered. I don't agree. She's not. That character's not. Why be true to all these other characters except for the one that is a weak female? Weak females happen. Weak females are out there. I was one of them. Not every woman has an arc in her life where she goes from being fragile to empowered. There are weak women in this world. We try to help them. We try to help empower them, but they exist. So not every character in a goddamn book has to be empowered. That takes away from Daenerys' empowerment. Sansa was not motherfucking empowered in this book.
So So we have the council scene next, and we get introduced to a character that will play a part, but he doesn't get much screen time, and that's Janna Slint, the head of the, what are they called? I'm sorry.
City Watch.
The City Watch, thank you very much.
Yeah.
But he gets the point across that, yeah, we don't have enough guard here to do what we need to do, and especially with all the people coming in town for the joust and the tourney. So we get that.
Everyone seems disinterested, but Ned is the only one that's actually concerned about the safety of the small folk. Mm-hmm. I think that was the whole point of that scene. And we had lots of swallows, but none of them were underage.
And Lord Baelish will come up with the money.
Yes.
Yeah.
He will.
I think one of the other points which comes into play later is that, Ned has a propensity to give people or to assign people from his own guard to other things. So the fact that he gives Janice 20 of his own men, is important.
That's more than a whole Dothraki army.
I know. There's only 10 people in the Dothraki army. To give 20 from your own house guard. Jesus.
And by the way, Peter, because they call him Peter in the series, he dresses snazzier than anyone else on the council. He's got the best clothes. He's
a well-dressed man.
Oh, I thought Renly would have the best clothes, but Peter has definitely
got the income clothes from all those whorehouses.
Yeah, they've always talked about his dress. Yes.
Okay, and I do want to give a little aside to a friend of mine is writing a blog post for specfigmedia.com. Where he is writing summaries and reviews of each episode from the point of view from someone who hasn't read the books at all. And one of the things he pointed out that I didn't know, that the guy that plays Peter was a major character in the TV show The Wire on HBO. And it's one of his favorite characters from that show. So for a lot of people that have watched The Wire, I've only watched part of first season. And it's a great show, but I just haven't watched very much of it. The guy that plays Peter is a very major character in that show and a very good actor, so it's good to see him doing so well, I think, in the show.
Yeah, I haven't even heard of The Wire because I only got HBO for this, but it makes me want to actually watch because I really like Peter.
Yeah, I like the guy playing him. He ends up being the mayor of Baltimore because The Wire is based in Baltimore, Maryland.
I tried watching The Wire and it didn't grab me, so I just moved on. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then we have the interaction between Ned and Pycelle about John Arryn.
Poison is the weapon of women, the craven poison and eunuchs.
Yeah, it was very fun to see how he tries to point the blame to Varys by saying, oh yeah, eunuchs, yeah, they use poison. Mm-hmm.
I've heard it said that poison is a woman's weapon.
Yes. Women, cravens, and eunuchs. Did you know that Lord Varys is a eunuch?
Everybody knows that. Yeah.
But that was a good scene, and we got the introduction to the book about the families, the different great houses. It was nice to see the introduction of the Umbers. Mm-hmm. Which, for those that haven't read the book, there's the Umbers are one of the families that you hear about, and the Great John is someone hopefully we'll meet in the future, and he's a cool character. It'll be cool to see. I always imagined, I don't know if I can't remember the actor's name now, and I'm gonna feel bad about this, but the guy that plays the leader of the Hawkmen in Flash Gordon. And he was in many movies where there's, the English, but I can't remember his name. I'm going to fucking put
Brian this Blessed? In.
Yes! Thank you! That's awesome! Anyway.
Brian Blessed.
Yeah, Brian Blessed.
Oh. I picture Gimli.
Well, Brian Blessed looks a lot like Gimli in...
Okay.
But that's who I always...
Taller.
But
yeah, I can't remember that actor's name and feeling really stupid. The guy from Sliders.
John Rhys Davies.
That's it.
Yeah, John Rhys Davies. So, yeah.
I'm like going Russell TV Davies? No, that's Doctor Who. What am I thinking?
But yeah.
Brian Blessed died. We'll see Great John Umber in the future, and I'm looking forward to seeing who's going to be playing him.
Did you hear what Chooch said?
What'd you say?
Brian Blessed die a couple of years ago?
So it's not going to be him.
I remember he was very sick, but I don't know if he actually died. But
yeah, I'm pretty sure he's no longer with us.
If he's playing the role of the Great John, that'll be awesome.
Because he's dead and that's zombie. Yes. Awesome.
That'll be.
But people would also know him from Blackadder if they ever saw him.
Blackadder. Yes, he played the king in Blackadder.
Yeah. Okay, now I know who he is.
Now I'm going to pull out my Blackadder CDs and or DVDs and play them.
Oh, well, who wants to live forever? Die!
The book about the families, though, and you know, they mention the Umbers because that's the page that he turns to, but obviously that's going to play a part in the future, and it comes up later with the next scene, which is he basically goes to the armory because he figures out that John Aaron had gone there, and he gets to meet Gendry and, you know, points out that, oh, yeah, he looks just like Robert.
So. Jinxies.
I feel like we could have gotten a little more exposition there, like, because he just comes out and he goes,
if the day ever comes when that boy would rather wield a sword than forge one, you send him to me.
Find anything?
King Robert's bastard son.
All he had to do was say, it's one of Robert's bastards, he looks like all the other I've met, or he looks just like Robert, because I just feel like people who haven't read the books again are gonna be like, oh my God, Robert has a bastard. What does this mean? But in the books, it's kind of accepted. Everybody knows Robert's got multiple. A lot of them. There's one that he's publicly acknowledged because she was, the mother was a noble woman and he bedded her at his brother's wedding night in his wedding bed. So, I mean, he had to recognize him. So people know about his bastards. People know what they look like. They're all over the place. And I just feel like there should have been more exposition there.
And they may touch on that later, but the main point for this part was, you know, oh my gosh, you know, it's Robert's bastard.
I love that Gendry's arm was bigger than the other. Did you guys notice that?
Actually, no.
Sorry.
Nope.
His one arm is bigger than the other, just like it is in the books. And I was so excited. I was like, because I'm watching. I'm like, okay, there's somebody clinging in the background. That's got to be him. That's got to be him. And then I see him walk over. And I'm like, there's one arm. There's the other. The other one has no muscle tone. This one's all muscly. And I was all excited. But I guess I'm the only dork.
Well, one thing to say to everybody that's watching the show it's that hasn't read the book. It's very obvious what they're pointing to. And we won't talk about it. But if you've taken any sort of genetics class,
yeah,
it's pretty obvious. And there was one line that Gendry says, which I won't repeat here because it's pretty much a giveaway of what's going on, that he says about his mother and ties back to an earlier line. So that in the book, it's a little less obvious what's going on, but because it's TV, they got to rush it. They're making it pretty obvious, and we'll get to it when we get to it. But, you know, I don't mind how they've done all this, but the line of events that happened in this episode and the lines that they used, it's like, okay, only, you know, and I can't say this for sure because I've read the books, but it's like, okay, this is like so obvious that it's, you know, pretty much just spelling it out instead of making you say, ah, okay, I understand what's going on. It's pretty much, oh yeah, well, yeah.
Well, it's like when Ser Jorah, you know, when they say that Daenerys is pregnant, wait a minute, I've got to go run a quick errand. Zink. You know what I mean? It's like, it's way more blatant. And again, they have to expedite it because it's a TV show with 10 episodes. So, but it is, it's kind of like, I don't know, dumbing it down. And part of the thing,
simplifying it.
No, what I was going to say is that one of the things that I really enjoy about the books is that it takes you a while to get there. It's kind of like they've been, you know, the books have been compared to Lord of the Rings before, but part of it is it takes a while. In Lord of the Rings, they walk a lot and it takes a long time to get from place to place. And in this book, you know, there's horses and stuff like that. They get around faster, but the story progresses slower and you get a lot more richness and a lot more detail. They just can't do that in a 10 episode series season. Yeah. So,
news update, Brian Blessed is still alive.
I thought so. I'm so happy.
You killed him.
No, he was sick and peaked. He was peaked.
Is it bad that I looked it up and figured that out like minutes ago and I got distracted and just set my phone down and forgot to say anything about it? That's kind of bad, isn't it?
He's not dead yet.
He's mostly dead.
Feeling much better.
He's mostly dead. So the next scene we get is probably my favorite scene in the episode, which is Ned leaving the council, going back and with his book and seeing Arya, and Arya talking about her training and what she's doing, but then showing exactly who she is and saying, no, that's not me.
Can I be Lord of the Holdfast?
You will marry a High Lord and rule this castle. And your sons shall be knights and princes and lords.
Mm-hmm. No. That's not me.
I'm not going to marry a High Lord, which is just like, I don't know why. It just makes me feel so good. I guess I'm a feminist.
I love it.
But just the fact that she's, you know, looks at him and like, nah, that's not me. And she's 9 years old or whatever age she's supposed to be. And she's like, I may not be a warrior. I may not be accepted as this type of person, but I'm not going to be somebody that's going to just marry some guy and have kids. And it's just, what's good about the books. It's you know, who she
and
is.
And that's one of the two things that I love about that scene. One of them is that at the beginning of this recording, you said that, you know, you really missed Sirio being present. Mm-hmm. I feel like they brought him into that scene. You didn't see him, but he was all over that scene in her attitude, in her, obviously in her training, but having, you know, the way they showed that scene with her doing the training and talking about Sirio, and then it was just like he was there. You didn't even really need him there doing the training montage like the last episode, which was so awesome, because it was almost as if she had like brought some of him into her, because she was so much more confident, so much more empowered. So when she had that like really firm and unwavering assertion when her dad was saying, you know, oh, you'll marry and you'll give birth to knights, and she was just like, no, that's not me. And I want to say that in the book, she said, that's not me, that's Sansa. I don't think that it mattered that they changed that line from the book. I think it was even more poignant and to the point and in her dad's face to make sure that he didn't miss it, that there is a difference between Sansa and I am not going to take, that's not the route that I want to take. Well, it wasn't even like she was saying the route that I don't want to take. She clearly had no intention to take the Berthyn route, so. Yeah. Go, Arya.
Go, Arya.
Go, girl, go.
Yep. Arya's awesome. I also liked her. She's like, is Bran going to live with us?
Oh, I know.
Oh.
And I mean, you talk to people, or I've talked to people that haven't read the books and just, you know, trying to give. Arya is almost everybody's favorite character, if it's not Tyrion. And it's good to see because, you know, she is the heart of the books in my mind. So it's great.
Sirio says a water dancer can stand on one toe for hours.
It's a hard fall down these steps.
Sirio says every hurt is a lesson, and every lesson makes you better.
Yeah, and she's definitely my hands-down number one favorite character. I've been smitten by that character in the books for years, and I'm in love, 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 love with Maisie Williams. Yes, I looked up that actress's name because I think she's just phenomenal. After this one, I actually had to go look up her name. But I think that I think that would be an interesting thing, is maybe we should at one point go down what our list, maybe at the end of the season on our last episode, we could go down and say, okay, based on what this season was, what was encaptured in the season, who were your favorite, like, top three characters?
Mm, awesome.
And why?
And why?
I feel like
I want a 3-paragraph essay for each person.
I feel like, and I'm told often that I kind of was, that when I was a kid, I was an Arya. And so I connected with Arya right away. I was not as quick and agile and quiet as she is, because she's much more graceful. But then again, I didn't have a water dancing instructor.
Right.
I kind of like quad hopped around. But I still hit things with sticks.
Didn't we all?
Yeah.
It was nice to see Jory get more screen time. In fact, he had more screen. Yeah. He has more screen time in the show than he had in the book,
and more than Ned, I think.
And it was nice to see the connection, the scene where Jory goes up to Jamie. We didn't get much of Jamie in this episode, but the whole, you know, it solidifies the idea that Jamie respects men of honor, men of battle. You know, he's sort of disrespecting him, but then once he says, well, I fought beside you in such and such battle, he's like, oh, well, you remember this, and yeah, you got that scar there, I remember you, and, you know, you see his character work, whereas he still disrespects him for being Ned's man, but respects him as a man himself and for what he has done. So I thought that was a good scene for, you know, for Jamie and Jory.
How many girls did the king have in there? Because three of them came out, but there were still more giggling in there.
There was still an awful lot of giggling, yeah.
Well, and one that he thought must smell like blackberry jam.
That was my favorite line in the whole episode.
It was like, oh my.
What the hell does that mean?
For those who haven't read the books, this is another added scene. And I think it's another great added scene because it gives us a little more depth on Jamie, because he's like, he does this when I'm on guard, because he's just shoving it in my face that he disrespects my sister and I can't do anything about it because I'm one of the king's guard and I don't have a choice. And it also shows that, like, Robert is a big old hound dog and has lots of stamina.
We didn't doubt that. He has quite the appetite.
Blackberries.
So it was going to say, even after Jamie had shown kind of the respect, and then the hackles come back up. So you know, I do not serve.
Yeah.
Start.
It's like Viserys. You don't forget, you know, that personality is still there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we get the other mention of Theon there, where Jamie's like, yeah, I remember the Greyjoys. And, oh, yeah, didn't I see that youngest son of Balon at Winterfell? And so you get the other opinion of Theon.
Yes. And Jory says that Theon's a good lad. And
I doubt
James
it.
Like, no, I doubt it.
Did you also notice that the point that Theon was there was to deliver a message to Robert that didn't get delivered to Robert from Ned?
Yeah.
Or Jory. Yeah.
Not after he discovers, it's after he discovers that, or realizes that it's after he decides that he thinks that Gendry is Robert's bastard. And you know, so then Jory is taking the note, and it doesn't get delivered to Robert because Jamie didn't take it.
Right.
Just wanted to point that out.
But I thought it was actually, you know, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, well, I'm glad you didn't give it to him because he would have read it, and then we would have...
Exactly. I know. Jamie really stepped in it by not... Whoa, wait. Oh. Is that spoiler?
Wait, spoiler.
Drink!
Yeah.
So...
It's been a different ending.
Yeah. We already mentioned this, but we went back to the cleaning of the armory and the conversation with John and Sam. And again, I want to meet Roz. And yeah, we don't get to see Roz. I don't think we saw Roz. I have to disagree with that because my picture of Roz in my head is much different than the girl that was pleasing Tyrion.
I'm going to go look.
Love Sam Wells' whole thing. He's like, and what about her? And he puts his hands over his chest, and John says, you don't want to know. That good, better. I just thought that was awesome.
My favorite line was,
she was alone in a room with a naked girl.
I didn't know where to put it.
I know where to put it.
Yeah.
But again, this is where Alistair comes in. And again, he starts with his conversation and you're like, okay, he's trying to give a good lesson. But then at the end, he, you know, goes over to Sam and talking about, you know, you'd feed us for 2 weeks with your fat ass.
We should have had a couple of boys like you along, shouldn't we? Soft, fat boys like you. We'd have lasted a fortnight on you and still had bones left over for soup.
And it was it's so just like, mean. You are that such a bastard.
That whole story reminded me a touch of the Donner Party Crossing. And it's probably only because I did a bit of research into it. Actually, after listening to Fetidus, I really started researching that. And I was just like, all of a sudden, all these images were coming to my head. And I was like, oh, my God, that's horrible. So I kind of wonder, like, okay, did he actually eat his brothers? Is he got a bit of the cannibalism sickness in the head now? I don't know. But again, maybe I think it's probably because I did research into that, that I just made that connection.
Mm.
Yeah. So. I think Alistair's just a son of a bitch, but anyway.
Yeah.
I think he's just a cold, mean bastard.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, I think he means well. I think he thinks he's honorable, and he thinks he's doing exactly what he needs to do to protect the wall. But anybody else that has compassion would not feel that way. So,
right. Like most people, he thinks that he's doing, you know, the right thing and not seeing, you know, how his actions are impacting people in a less than motivating way than if he took a different tack.
So the next scene was the joust and the tournament. You know, much condensed unless they put stuff in the next episode, which I doubt they'll do. But, you know, the main purpose of this was to give Baelish some information to Sansa, which some of the, as Nundy just said, was, lines that in the books were part of, the Hound's, description of events. And we get to see Gregor Clegane.
The mountain that rides.
Yes, and we didn't see enough of him, but he is a huge guy.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was pretty good how they handled the death of Sir Hugh. Yes.
The first thing my husband said when they were lining up for the tourney, and when he was looking at Sir Hugh, he goes, "Where's his beaver?" That's the throat guard that you would wear during a joust. And he's like, "Wait a minute, where's his beaver?" And then when all of that happens, it's like, yeah. He wasn't wearing his beaver. He got it in the throat. It was very gruesome and gory and looked awesome.
I like how you said that.
It did. That kind of lingered there for a while. Like, you really got the feeling of that death. But I think they missed an opportunity in not having Sansa there with her friends and having that levity.
Yeah.
I mean, it was...
Right. To contrast.
It was crazy having it. And you see the impact of it is right there in front of the girls. Yeah. But it's a much stronger juxtaposition when you go from from the swooning to death.
Right in front of you.
Right.
You also don't have as many people. There's another time when there's just not enough people in the scene.
Like, right. I agree.
There's a huge tourney that showing up for months or weeks.
Yeah. I mean, the long shot, you get a pretty good idea of the number of people that would be there. But the idea that, you know, they only showed one joust, so you don't get all the other characters that had jousts. You don't, you know, as you mentioned earlier, we don't get the introduction of Sir Loras, the Knight of Flowers, which is a major character later on.
Yeah.
And so we have, you know, just, I mean, the purpose of the joust was, A, to show Robert being Robert again.
Yeah.
And then the story of the Hound and the death of Sir Hugh to get him out of the way in case there was something he knew that you know we wouldn't find out about.
Yeah, why don't you talk more about that, PG? Because I don't know that people that aren't familiar with the story will pick up the continuity from his name previously mentioned in the conversation with Ned about John Arryn.
Yeah, so we had you know, three different points where Hugh is mentioned. One is that he's the squire for John Arryn. So maybe he has information that could help Ned understand what happened. Then you have Jory going to talk to Hugh.
And, to summon him.
Yeah, and he's like, "Well, you're not a knight, Jory, so I'm not going to talk to you." And then you see him being a knight and not being very good at it because he was... skewered by a lance.
Yes. And most northern men are not knights because they worship the old gods. And to be a knight, you have to say your words in the sept.
Yes. And I would have, I thought that was an opportunity for, you know, again, there's a lot of opportunities missed, but because, you know, for time and everything else, because
they had us dorks and geeks care.
Yeah, they had the conversation, Jory and Ned, talking about, oh, knights, you know, they act this way and they're, you know, holier than thou. And, you know, part of me was like, well, Ned, you could have made him a knight at any point if, you know, you wanted to, and there wouldn't be this discrimination against Jory for not, you know, being a knight. But
I don't think they're going to have time to go into the two different, at this point, the main two religions that are, you know, going on in Westeros, the old gods and the seven. So you know.
Well, they've mentioned it.
Well, yeah, but I don't think we're going to get that in-depth.
No, I don't think we're going to get in-depth.
Which is sad because it is pretty freaking. It is a pretty. I mean, it's well fleshed out, and it's, you know, one of the things that you miss when you don't read the whole big old tome, right, is the detail of that he put into that.
Big impacts on the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And during the while the tournament is going on, we have the scene between Cersei and Ned, which is our only real good chance to see Cersei being Cersei.
Yeah.
And, you know,
they trade threats.
But it was awesome because she shows how she plays the Game of Thrones, because she's very, you know, we need to put this behind us, and, you know, trying to placate him. And then at the end, it turns into them talking about, you know, their threats against each other. Yeah. So,
your enemies.
I think, yeah, that's a great line, Chooch. I think she was also trying to gauge him to see, do I have to worry? How much do I have to worry?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, most of what she's doing is feeling him out. What does he know? Whether it's what does he know or how is he going to act, you know, in his position. So, yep.
Hey, did anyone else notice that Sansa looked like a woman at the tourney instead of a little girl like usual? Like, she had the low top, and she had, like, bosom, and it was tight around her waist instead of this drapey dress that she's been wearing so far.
She had bosoms.
Bosoms.
I must rewatch.
They're there.
Ew.
Wait, she's a redhead. Do you think
she's rods?
That's gross.
All this time.
Damn it.
Ew. She's a little girl.
Sorry.
So we finish up at the Crossroads Inn.
Yes. So it was sort of, I mean, a little confusing because, you know, last time you see Tyrion, he's saying he's going to the brothel right outside of town.
Yeah.
And then he's at the Crossroads Inn, which, you know, if you haven't read the book and you don't know what that scene is, you're like, okay, well, why is Catelyn right outside of town at a brothel? Yeah. You know, that type of thing. But obviously,
I feel like time progression is difficult in the series.
Yes.
I didn't hear what PG said at the end there.
I'm sorry.
I was just saying that why would Catelyn be at a brothel, basically? So they're at the Crossroads Inn, so obviously time has passed. They're not quite right at near Winterfell. And, you know, we have the scene where Catelyn sees all the liegemen that will support her, and lays down the whoop ass on Tyrion.
And shring, shring, shring.
And we've, you know, part of us are like, oh my god, he didn't do anything wrong. We love Tyrion. Yeah. But, you know, that's one of the great things about the book. You know, because you have the point of view of these characters, that Tyrion may, you know, probably had nothing to do with what was going on. He likes Bran and some of the Starks. Yet we have Catelyn, who is very much in her own right, hating the Lannisters. And so,
she's a crazed mother.
She is a mom with a fucking mission. And
don't mess with Mama Wolf.
That's right.
I feel like the series kind of set it up so that you kind of wonder if Tyrion is innocent or not more. Because his first thing to Bran is, what do you remember? Oh, that's very interesting. And it seems very suspicious. And I don't know. I feel like the series is kind of gearing us to think maybe he was involved.
I think there may have been
thinking the opposite.
Yeah.
I think it was more. I'm sorry, PG.
No, go ahead. You're going to say the exact same thing I was going to say. So go ahead.
Purple elephant. No, okay. So in my opinion. In my opinion, the book actually. Don't try to figure me out, PG Holyfield. No, I think that the book actually made me more suspicious of him than the series is doing.
Hmm.
Yeah, it seemed clear to me that he was curious. You know that
he's
like, it may not be completely clear that to him that it was his brother and sister, but he's pretty sure.
He suspects them at least.
And so he wants to know if you know, the kid knows anything, because he does want to protect his family.
Right. That's the way that I'm taking the series, is that he's suspicious and he's very, very curious, But I get the impression, and I would love to hear feedback on folks that are watching that haven't read the book yet. Do you think that Tyrion was involved in Bran's? Obviously, you know, it was Jaime that pushed him out the window. But when the assassin came, do you think that Tyrion was involved? I mean, the assassin had Tyrion's dagger. Do you think he was involved? So,
I mean, trying to look at it from the point of view of someone that hasn't read the book. Of course, I can't do that, but the way he asked the question and the way the feeling I got was just a callback to the scene in the dining room where he was talking to Jamie and talking about, oh, I want to find out what he remembers when he wakes up. And in that scene, it was pretty obvious from, you know, the way Jamie reacted that, you know, he's like, oh, I don't, you know, it makes me wonder if you, you know, care for the family, you know, the way that you should type thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, whether the question I have with that scene was more if he did find out, or the reason he was asking was whether he wanted to just know that his sister and brother were involved, or was he trying to find out because he wants to protect his brother?
Exactly.
And sister? Yeah. So that's the feeling I got from the scene.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he does love Jamie. I mean, okay. I mean, he loves his sister too. But I think that I think PG has said before that you can see the true bond between Jamie and Tyrion. But Chooch is giving a shenanigans look. No.
No.
not a shenanigans. It was like questioning. No. Okay. All right. He's flipping me off now. So moving on.
Love the last scene. Love how it played out. Made me want the next episode right away.
Yep.
And looking forward to the next episode. Yep.
Well, we have definitely run longer than we have.
We've run really long.
And I'm really surprised because not as much happened in this episode as happened in other episodes, I think, when you sort of look at, you know, the passage of time and the introductions of characters and things. But we definitely had a lot to talk about because, you know, the show's this good. So it's a good thing. And
maybe I shouldn't take notes again. Maybe that's what made us run long.
That's it. You took notes.
Yeah. Okay. We didn't do the poll. Do you guys want to do that or skip it?
Absolutely. Well, considering how wrong I was in the poll because I was expecting.
I really want to read your. I really, really want
to. Yes, we should go through the poll.
Do the poll.
Okay. So before we leave today, we want to talk about our ongoing game that we are having on the show, and eventually we're going to have a poll on the website where you guys can play along. Our question this week was, how many swallows, underage swallows of alcohol were in the episode, and how many deaths? So what were everybody's guesses, and what was the final tally?
Nutty guessed, and I'm doing these in orders of submission, Nutty guessed 4 swallows and 2 deaths. Chooch voted or submitted 12 swallows and 3 deaths.
Damn.
Wouldn't you just expect a scene with Bran just sucking on a bottle of wine or something?
I thought that it was going to be the guys at the wall.
And then PG's submission was 1,000 deaths and 1/2 a swallow, a spit take.
Wait, what?
1,000 deaths and 1/2 of a swallow.
No, I heard it. I just
I just want to say it again. But he did add a winky after that.
Well, you know, I'm not gonna give a spoiler. So there's gonna be a lot of deaths in this series at some point.
Right.
It's just I'm gonna keep guessing until we get to the episode where we got a lot of deaths.
And then my vote was 2 swallows and 1 death. And Christiana's vote was 1 death and 3 drinks. She did not, you know, say swallows. Actually, Chooch didn't say swallows either, so they're more classy than the rest of us. And we actually had 1 death and 0 swallows. There was no underage drinking. Yeah. Are we in agreement on that?
Yeah, I think so.
So we all lose.
So we all lose again.
Wow. Yeah.
So I figured, you know, we would lose if we went over. Mm-hmm. So I thought maybe there would be 1 swallow, but I wasn't sure. I was just like, well, maybe someone's going to take a drink, and then someone's going to make them laugh, and there would be a spit take, and then we'd have only 1/2 a swallow.
I see.
Or it was somebody that wasn't used to alcohol, so they spit it, you know?
There you go. So
Yes, we found a tool to put a poll on the website.
A tool.
It is a mighty nice
tool. You're such a tool.
Which will be happening this week.
Nettie can't talk. She's like...
Which will happen this week as soon as we decide on what the new question will be.
Yes.
And this is a private ballot, so it's not going to be something where you go to the site, you vote, and you see what everybody else is voting.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get to see nothing.
Yeah.
And okay. It will reveal to the next show.
So I think we should get rid of the drinking part of it. So we need something else. Unless there's something else we come up with. I mean, there's got to be something else.
We don't
have to announce it right now. We can just announce the poll and then they can
go.
Ooh,
I've got one.
Ooh, what?
How many words does Khal Drogo say?
How many? Oh, that's good.
How many times does Hodor say
Hodor? How many different dresses does Sansa wear in the episode?
Ooh, okay. That's good, that? Actually.
Give me a pen.
While she's writing that down, did everyone notice the blatant wig on Cersei? That's the second time we've seen her wear a wig to a formal occasion.
No, I don't know.
When she was sitting in the tournament box?
Yep.
I'm looking at her bosoms. So Popman had commented on the website for the last episode. After watching episode 4, he says, "Hey, just listened to the podcast, enjoyed it, and I'm not just pulling a little finger and telling you what you want to hear."
Nice. Chooch.
Pull my little finger.
Oh, yeah. Chooch, thanks for the info on the opening credits. The inverse sphere explains the horizon going up when the camera is zooming on Vas Dothrak, which I did appreciate as well. When they pan over to Vas Dothrak, you have sort of the reverse, basically the land going up in the air, which you wouldn't normally expect, and that worked as well. If I can comment on episode 4 of the series, spoiler alert for anyone foolish enough to be reading these comments and not having seen the recent episode, which, you know, we've already talked about all this.
Yeah.
It was great seeing the Three-Eyed Crow, which you already mentioned. It was great seeing Ghost used as an intimidation tactic.
Agreed.
Some backstory was awesome. Tyrion and Theon. Some of it was lackluster, i.e. Viserys droning on about dragons during sex.
Get to the
scene. I like that.
See, I liked it because, you know, he was, you know, getting her all excited. I thought for a moment, okay, he knows what buttons to push on this girl. But yeah. Then he, you know, becomes Viserys and I'm like, oh, you loser.
Fuck.
But I think my favorite scene was with Jaime talking to Jory about the siege during the Greyjoy Rebellion. Jaime briefly warmed up to Jory, since in a real way that he'd been comrades in the arms. They've had nice touches with Jaime in dealing with other fighting men, like complimenting Ser Barristan on his fighting technique he used on the outlaw leader. It showed some of Jaime's charisma and gave Jory some screen time, which we talked about, and that was a great comment from Patman, a regular now commenter on the site. So keep coming back.
Yay.
Thanks, Pat.
Was there anything else? Oh, there was one other comment somewhere, I think on Twitter, where they were asking us to, if we could give a complete list of the Twitter handles for the different characters that are being portrayed in Twitter, whether it's... Are all of these that you've been following, Nutty, are they official HBO?
No, actually, I don't think any of them are official. They're all random. There's lots of spoilers. I will post a list. I didn't compile it myself, but I've been using it, and I'll post one on the Specfic Media website under our podcast feed, and look for that in the coming week.
Awesome.
So
that's
we do it. We do have some Twitter comments.
Oh, yes.
Sorry.
That's okay. I just opened it up. From B.A. Matthews. There are three tweets, so all from the same person. Loved Sam, but didn't like that he was accepted without John's help. It was a big part of explaining why John is placed where he is, which I'm not sure I understand because Sam needed John's help in order to get accepted. But
yeah, maybe that was a mistype. Like, wasn't.
Yeah. Something like that. Also, Daenerys hitting Viserys with the belt, priceless. I have to 100% agree. I wanted to hit him with a belt too. As satisfying as Tyrion hitting Joffrey. Oh, yes. Love that. That's become an animated GIF that is being spread all over the net. Tyrion hitting Joff. Nice. I wonder if the belt scene will also do the same. That's it for that.
Yay.
Very cool.
I saw one that was to you, PG. It was from Skip and Cincy on Twitter, at Skip and Cincy. And it's Peter Dinklage, the next James Bond. Discuss. Yes.
I would love to see it.
Hell to the yeah.
Oh, I'd pay for that.
I would so pay for that. Nettie?
I would love to see that, actually.
Right?
I would totally see that. And all the other actors
being full, you know, normal height.
Yeah.
He would still pull off the sexy.
You know, I think Peter Dinklage could pretty much do anything. Mm-hmm. So I would probably see him in just about anything. I recently saw him in the American version of Death at a Funeral, and he was hysterical, and I loved it. So I would love to see him as James Bond.
And sure, he's the next Doctor Who.
Do we think?
No, he's not a British actor. He was born in Jersey. He can't New Jersey. Not
they can break
British Jersey.
They can break the wall. Someday there will be a female.
The one time they did an American Doctor Who, they got totally panned. So I don't think they're ever going to do that again.
Yeah. I had a couple Twitter replies. Two from, I don't know how to pronounce his ad handle, at Coriantura, Coriantura. Which is Ryan. So he says, my only gripe is the apparently we're putting in more than passing nudity / sexuality in just because we can attitude.
Huh.
And they followed up with, I may have read it too long ago, but I don't recall there being that much of that in the books, though I know sexuality was there.
I feel like it's pretty on par with the book.
I think it, what do you think, Chooch? Because you just read it.
I thought it was pretty much on par with the book, too. And then the last episode, I think, when PG had read a comment, somebody saying, you know, I think they're just throwing stuff in. And, of course, PG said he hoped so.
But, yeah, you do, too. But I think it's pretty on par. I mean, it may be a little bit more, but I think there's also so much taken out of the book that it may seem like it's, you know.
I think the only thing they've done is, and I don't think it's going against the book, but some of, you know, like the scene last episode with Danny in bed with Drogo, and they're talking about the child being male. And she's obviously naked, but they don't really show a whole lot. I think that that's something that, you know, when you look at the book, they may not spell it out. Oh, she's naked in bed, but obviously that's what she does. So, you know, I don't think that that's, you know, going against or adding nudity to be gratuitous. I think it's just, you know, saying that that's, you know, if we end up seeing, you know, some naked stuff that we aren't expecting, we'll point it out because, you know, I'm happy for that.
You guys, in the scene where the, you know, Huey, Dewey, Louie, one of the girls was having sex with Viserys in the tub, they didn't really show, like, full-on boobs, did they? But, like, there were no nips. It was just, like, side boob and stuff like that.
Yeah,
right?
They didn't show her. And then she had longer hair and smaller breasts, so.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, it wasn't invented.
I saw a little nip, but
I think you probably looked harder than I did.
I was looking for it, as opposed to you.
Oh, Chooch says a little bit too. So all right, I will leave that to the men.
Just a little bit.
Any more feedback?
And one from Guava Mike, simply saying, "How about it's one of the most infuriating book series you'll ever read?"
Infuriating. I would love to hear. Guava Mike is another, along with Patman23, was one of our City of the Heroes listeners, and he gave us a lot of feedback too. I would love for you to expand on what you're saying. Does anybody else?
Infuriating is just as far as the waiting.
Yeah,
that's what I assume whenever somebody says that it's frustrating or infuriating. It's because you have to wait a very long time in between books.
If
he means it as reading the books, it does infuriate you. I mean, we've talked about before. I mean, George R. R. Martin doesn't care about the idea of you know, making something that's going to please people. He wants to represent what the story that, you know, the sex and the violence and the death and the Game of Thrones. So you
no
have,
Hollywood ending.
Yeah, we talked about how dark this fourth episode was. You know, it doesn't really compare to how dark the book can get at times.
Right.
And for that, I mean, if he means infuriating in that respect, I think that, yeah. But it's also what makes it such a great series is that it's more real.
Yeah.
It's fantasy, but it's more real than any other fantasy series you're ever going to read. So
that's my opinion. But yeah, expand on that fourth Guava, Mike. I'd love to know if either of our thoughts were right. And I wouldn't say that even if we take it from the bent that it's a long wait between the books, it doesn't infuriate me. I've said it before. I'll say it until the day I die. If he never gets around to writing, if another book lands in my hand, I will always be grateful. But if I don't get another book in my hands to read, if A Dance with Dragons never actually comes out and I get to read it, I'm already so damn grateful for the first four books and what I've gotten from them and the richness of the characters and the stories. I'm fine with that. He has already done me a huge solid by giving me those first four books. I want the others desperately, like, you know, heroin addict wants, you know, heroin. But if I don't get it, I'm still eternally grateful for what I have. And I can't get mad at him just for not writing it as quickly as I want him to. You know what I mean? So
you want it good or you want it fast?
Yeah.
That's how I feel. You want it good or you want it fast. Some writers can write good stories fast, but these are huge, so it's going to take a while.
And I'm just grateful for what he's done so far, even if he never does get another one. If something happens and that Dance with Dragons doesn't come out, or that one comes out and leaves us with a major cliffhanger, and the sixth one doesn't come out, then I'm still damn happy with these characters. And I can, I mean, it's amazing.
Yep. Yeah, and back to prose, fiction that infuriates you is really well-written fiction.
Exactly. If it gets you pissed.
Any kind of emotion, yeah.
Anyway, we finished our feedback, and thank you everybody that did leave feedback. If you do want to leave feedback, please listen to the outro where we give our phone number and our email address. We'd love to hear from you, and thanks again for listening, and we look forward to next week because... we have to find out what happens to Tyrion. So,
I wonder what's going to happen.
I wonder. When they go to Winterfell.
I wonder how they're going to handle what happens.
And if you saw the previews for next week, it might be a little different from the book. So, but anyway, thank you for listening, and we will catch you next week on Beyond the Wall. Talk to you later.
Thanks. Say fuck.
Knights.
Who say fuck?
If you'd like to send feedback to Beyond the Wall, you can email us at btw@specficmedia.com. That's btw@specficmedia.com. Or you could send us a voicemail at 704-315-5884. Or you can comment on the web. Go to specficmedia.com and there you'll find a shiny little button to click on that'll take you right to our page. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported License. Feel free to share and remix. Just give us credit and don't charge money for it. Can we talk about Sam?
We will. We're going to pause for 15 seconds while I get a beer. Hold on.
Oh dear! Wait, do I need to get the rum out? What are we doing?
Blushed a lot. Are you okay with the innuendo?
Which one?
I know. Yeah, which one?
The entire thing was innuendo. The
I can't wait to do you again.
Oh yeah. I think it's clear with my husband sitting here that you
I
know,
would think
I
so.
Like to watch.
That he likes to watch.
Oh, you're here. Okay. Oh, good. Everything's right. Just had to double check that. You're on video.
I am on video. Why am I on video?
You mean she lives on beyond what?
No, she doesn't. I'm not saying that. She's the heart. She is the heart of the first book.
It's So she lives on to the end of the first book?
So she is the heart of the book that we've read so far that has been represented in the TV show. Biatch!
Chooch actually has a tool that he can use to post the poll. That's a lot of innuendo there. Chooch has a poll. Chooch, talk now.
He has a huge poll.
Me quiet. Chooch, talk now.
That's awesome.
Tell us about your poll, Chooch.
I have roomed with that man at multiple conventions, and he has a poll. For all of us, yes, apparently.
That everyone can use. No, yes. Wait. No, they can't.
Good clarification.
Thank
Good
you. Lord.
Bow chicka wow wow.
How come drinking during podcasting only comes up with PG?
Must be a pattern here.
Just to let you know, when I edit this, I'm going to put the hallelujah chorus right behind you.
Oh, totally.
Baby Jesus. You know?
Praise God, baby Jesus.
Saddened, PG.
You're saddened?
Yes, because when you were explaining how we shouldn't interrupt, I interrupted you, like, and you didn't even, like...
I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway.
I thought I would, like, lighten the mood, and you just didn't even notice. And I was like, oh, now I feel like an asshole, because I just was interrupting. No, cool. PG, why don't you read that?
No, you have to read it.
I told you I can't look it up. The laptop is under the desk.
This is your friend. I'm just kidding.
Chooch can read it.
Stop it. Shush. I'm reading it.
Do this. I have to go to bed.
We all do.
Go to bed. We get Alistair Thorne being Alistair Thorne.
Hold up. I waited very patiently for both y'all.
I was waiting for you, but nobody said anything. So I
interrupt. I was waiting for everybody to stop fucking talking.
Oh, Lord. So jump right in there, Viv.
I'm trying very hard to follow the rules. I'm biting my tongue. Chooch and I are sitting here very patiently.
Okay. I'm going to shut up now. And Viv.
Shut the fuck up.
Let me talk, woman.
I'm shy now. But I think that uplift and that empowerment. Sorry, that was my phone, so you feel free to delete that out. That was my vibrating phone. That's Kaleida, honey. I didn't drink. I'm just woozy.
I'm just woozy.